everyone. Welcome to Southcard. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcards.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southcards.com. Your NCS for this session is myself, N1SUZ. My name is Suzanne, and I am located in Danbury, Connecticut. Our guest speaker tonight is Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, who is the founder and creator of QRZ.com. All right, with that said, let's begin our program tonight. And remember that this is an open forum, and we encourage everyone to participate by coming aboard and asking questions of our guest speaker tonight. So don't be shy. We would like to hear your input and your comments as well. Okay, where did we look up call signs before QRZ? Well, that's an interesting question. Before QRZ, we always had the FCC database to turn to. Or I remember the huge fat call sign paperback books, larger in size than your average telephone book, where you could look up call signs. But one man was thinking ahead of his time, and that man was Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ. At the time Fred entered the picture, there was the call sign project, initially started by Rusty Carruth, N7IKQ, that consisted of making copies of the FCC data tapes and distributing the copies to other ham radio operators interested. Rusty eventually turned the project over to Fred Lloyd, who in turn began to think about using a new technology that was emerging at the time, CD-ROMs. New technology is expensive when it's first introduced, and the cost of mastering a CD-ROM was prohibitive. But Fred began to think outside the box, and with a bit of creative ingenuity, got the project going with the help of a CD-ROM shareware publisher. That was the birth of the QRZ CD-ROM. 1,000 initial copies gave way to 5,000 copies, and the need for more. There was a need for a way to look up call signs. Fred Lloyd, who is also a software engineer, started working on Windows-based programs to look up call signs, and amazingly, on October 28, 1993, almost 18 years ago to this day, QRZ.com was born. QRZ.com was one of the first 5,000 websites in existence, too. And quoting from Fred Lloyd's About QRZ page, since the fall of 2005, 25 editions and over 250,000 copies of QRZ Ham Radio CD-ROM have been sold worldwide, and it has earned the title of the number one best-selling amateur radio software product of all time. The QRZ CD-ROM has been used on all 7 continents, yes, including Antarctica, and has been carried on the Space Shuttle, the Mir Space Station, and is in use today aboard the International Space Station. Present day, QRZ.com itself has given amateur radio operators the opportunity to look up call signs at the click of a mouse, and much more beyond that. It is my honor and privilege to welcome aboard Southcars today the man behind that oh-so-familiar ham radio website, QRZ.com, Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ. Welcome, Fred. Please come aboard now.
Well, thank you, Susan, and thank you to Southcars. It's an honor to be here and a pleasure. I appreciate that great introduction, and I have to say that I've spoken in front of a lot of groups over the past couple of summers, and as I've been traveling, and two nice things about being here is that on this is that I'm here at home, sitting in my favorite office chair, and the other thing is that when people throw things at me, you know, I don't have to worry about that today. So thank you, Susan, and I'll turn it back to you.
Well, thanks very much, Fred, and I'm glad that you're relaxed, and this should be a pleasant experience for you because, yeah, we're sitting back in our chairs and enjoying ourselves. First of all, Well, since we're going to get started here, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Fred, and how you came into the hobby of ham radio? And I also read that you once were a CB-er.
Well, that's true. I was once a CB-er. I wasn't a very good CB-er, I should say. I wasn't a very active CB-er. But I was interested in electronics at an early age, and while in high school, I started working as a TV repairman, and my uncle had a small TV shop, and in exchange for fixing a TV, someone gave him a trunk load of old CB radios, and these were all tube radios with crystals. And I was just fascinated by them and started to play with them. And at the time, you needed a license, and I actually applied for and was granted a CB license. And I tried my best to get some of them working, and maybe one or two of them did, but it wasn't an easy thing back then for me. And I didn't have a lot of technical knowledge either at the time. But that was back around 1970 or so that I really got interested in two-way radio. But aside from having it with me for one summer, I really didn't do too much with it. And it was several, many years later, actually, in 1987, I by then moved to Silicon Valley and started hanging around a ham radio store there in Burlingame, California. There was an HRO in that location, and I would go in there on my lunch break just to look around and wish that I could get a radio. But I knew that the Morse code was a big problem for me. It was the reason I didn't get licensed back in the 70s. I just wasn't interested in it. But this time it was different. I took a look at the radios on the shelf there, and I decided, well, this time I'm going to do it. This time I'm not going to let something as trivial as Morse code get in my way of enjoying the hobby. And so I promised myself I'd get to buy a radio. So I sat down and I started studying. And a couple weeks later, walked in and took the test, and with 5 words a minute, and I came out of there with brand spanking new CSCE, and a week or so, 2 weeks later, my license came in, N6 UFT, Uniform Foxtrot Tango, was my first call sign, and I bought a TS-820 used from someone, made my first QSO in CW, because I thought at that point it became a challenge for me, so I decided to do it in CW. And I kept studying. By the way, just as a point of reference, I had a FCC first class license already, so I had the technical background, so it wasn't too terribly difficult to translate that into the amateur radio test. Long story short, I got my extra class license within about 6 weeks, and so I've been an extra class since 1987. Moved to Arizona in 1988, and I was assigned the call sign AA7BQ, and I've had it ever since. My first interest in ham radio was junk collecting, and I really loved ham fests, and I really bought and traded a lot of boat anchors. Back in the late 80s and early 90s, that was my main part of my main interest in the hobby, more even so than operating, before the days of QRZ.
Well, that's great, Fred, and that's really an insight into a lot of ways that people get into the hobby. First the CB, and then progress in there. But I enjoy the fact that you decided to get into to ham radio with junk collecting. And loving those radios, which we all do. But I also like the fact that you did that CW as your first contact. We have that in common because that's what I did too when I first started. Of course, I was only a Tech Plus, so I could only get on CW. I couldn't talk unless 10 meters was open. But that's really interesting. Well, you were involved with the Internet almost from the beginning. How did the growth of the Internet and the World Wide Web help amateur radio, in your opinion? What was made easier for ham radio operators with the availability of the Internet? I know that you were a software engineer and developed QRZ.com, but prior to developing that, what did you see as an improvement with the World Wide Web coming aboard?
Well, before QRZ came along, I was working in a field where Internet was a part of our everyday life. And the big thing then was the ham radio news group in the Usenet called rec.radio.amateur.misc or rec.radio.amateur. For a while it was rec.radio.hamradio, but that's where everybody got on and talked, and it was basically just a bulletin board type of forum, and there was no call sign lookup at the time. No one really had the database, but it was in there that I first learned of Rusty N7IKQ and his project, and it was there where I got the idea that, you know, maybe we should somehow pool our resources. The thing about the FCC database is that back in the late 80s, the FCC database had to be purchased. It wasn't available for free download. There were no downloads. And it was about $700 to get a copy of the data from the FCC. So it was a big deal. And no one really had $700 to spare. And so I decided, well, maybe I'll just do it. And by reselling the copies, you know, make it, you know, be able to recoup the cost, and our only goal was to break even. Well, that worked, needless to say, and now we're several tens of thousands of copies later. So, you know, the internet was it helped ham radio a tremendous amount. The help that ham radio received, however, didn't really get going immediately. At first, it wasn't much, to tell you the truth. In my opinion, there wasn't much useful for ham radio operators until the mid-90s, and it started to really, really take off. A couple of things that were very popular in the early days were ham radio modification files, so-called, you know, out-of-band transmit and, you know, Mars and Cap mods and things like that. Those were real popular. And because we're talking about the days of the textual internet, you know, before the World Wide Web, before there were images, it was just text. And those were the sorts of things that we had back then. But it truly was the mid-90s before things really started to take off. And it's true, QRZ was just, you know, there, the right place at the right time. And I was lucky to get the name QRZ. Because basically I just asked for it. I just thought I need a name for the CD, and QRZ, it just seemed cute to me at the time. And now, of course, it's a three-letter domain name, something that's impossible to get. And I'm just so glad I was there, and it was just serendipity. Every day I feel more and more fortunate about the whole thing.
Yes, and you know what? The original group that you belong to, now how did you connect with them, the amateur radio people, the REC dot, those people?
Okay, so we all keep watching the clock here too. Originally, the internet was basically just email. That's really all it was. And later on, it became possible to read what were called news articles, Usenet news. And when I wasn't otherwise busy at work, I would be scouring the internet looking for just anything of interest, really. And since I was interested in ham radio, I found that group listed amongst, you know, hundreds and hundreds of other groups. And I just started reading it. And, you know, once you read discussions, it's not long before you want to start contributing. So I just really found the people because they were there, and joined in a very small group at the time. I have to say, no one really introduced me to it. I just kind of stumbled upon it. Over.
Well, very good, Fred. This is N1SUZ, and this is TNT, and we're having an internet interview with Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ. Okay, Fred, QRZ.com has a great amount of information available to amateur radio operators, from the call sign database to news, information, discussion forums, online swap meets, and even practice exams to upgrade or even get your amateur radio license. Was this part of your original thoughts on developing QRZ.com to have an online community for amateur radio operators? And was QRZ similar to the internet news group you belonged to before, the rec.radio.amateur, or did you want a horse of a different color?
Okay, well, the internet news group really was just a a place where people could meet. And when I started out, my whole ambition in the beginning was to make the call sign database available. And I did that at first by selling copies of this CD that I was making. And very shortly after the first CD came out, I started the dial-up bulletin board so that people could look up call signs on the computer. And the dial-up bulletin board lasted less than a year before someone that I was associated with at work needed help setting up an internet system, a server on the internet, and a sort of moonlighting. I asked them, well, if I help you do this, can you help me out by letting me put my computer on the internet? And so they let me do it. And that's when I got the domain name QRZ. And so the very first thing that QRZ was designed to do was simply serve call signs. That was it, nothing else. That became pretty popular right off the bat. And the other thing that, the very next thing that I put online was radios for sale, sort of a for sale section, a swap meet area. And that's because, as I mentioned before, I love to trade and buy and sell radio junk. And so that was the second thing that went up. And then pretty soon I would get news articles, and I didn't quite know how I would put those up there, but I struggled in finding a program that could moderate articles and news, and so I started using some bulletin board software, some bits that I didn't actually write myself, but I modified to work with amateur radio. And then things started to pick up a bit faster. And then I got the idea that, well, not only should we allow call sign lookups, but we should let people add information to their call sign, and that's where the biography came to be, wherever they add their biography to their call sign. And then, sometime around 94 or 95, I had what I believe is the single greatest idea ever on QRZ, and that is to allow people to upload their photographs. And the pictures, or the QSL pictures, those were the things that really made it home. That's the one thing that people really, really liked. The first 30,000 pictures I reviewed by hand. Actually, people would send them to me by email, and then I would look at the picture, edit the picture, make sure it fit, it was up to standards, and then I would put it online. But after about a year of that, I decided, you know, it's just taking too much time, and so I decided to let people upload pictures without reviewing them, and the computer would take over the resizing and all that. And that's turned out, that's worked really well. At first, I was very worried about people would upload porn, for example, or, you know, illegal types of images, and as it turns out, this turned out not to be a problem because, first and foremost, there are so many people watching QRZ that no one can really get away with it for very long. And that's sort of how we moderate most things these days. We let the users write whatever they want, and then if it turns out to be bad, the self-policing takes over, and it works really well. So that's another part of the story. Back to you, Susie. This is AA7BQ.
Well, thank you, Fred. This is so interesting. You know, people, and even myself, probably don't realize all that goes into developing QRZ. I mean, we take it for granted. Every day we're on QRZ, at least I am. And just to think of the photographs, the 30,000 photographs to begin with that you hand-edited, it's just an amazing labor of love. And it is truly amazing and very impressive. W2FED has a question, and I think maybe KY6V has a question. So first, let me go to Joe. W2FED, come on aboard with your question or your comment for Fred.
Hi, Alpha Alpha 7 Bravo Queen Fred. First, I'd like to state I absolutely love QRZ.com. I'm fairly new to ham, and I absolutely love it and can't live without it. One question I have recently with the logbook summary with the people, it seems to have been disabled. Can you fill me in, please? I'm sorry to bring this up to this format, but is there a problem with the program? Because it's been out for most of this week, and I was just wondering on that part. Is it going to be operational soon? Because it's one of the best features of the QRZ.com, I feel. The second part of the question is, did you ever consider doing a QSL, an electronic QSL type of card with QRZ.com in relation to the logbook? Because I think that would be a fantastic feature if possible. This is W2FED, back to the net.
Okay, thanks, Joe. I'm just going to send it right over to Fred, AA7BQ. You can just take these questions as they come, Fred.
Okay, thank you, Susan, and thanks for the questions, Joe. The first question we had was about the logbook summary. We had some performance issues last week on the site. I was sitting here working on version 2 of the logbook, which we'll talk about in a minute, and I was noticing that sometimes a single call sign page retrieval would take as many as 10 seconds or more. Obviously, that's unacceptable. That's pretty much a broken website when things are happening like that. And I was watching the performance and taking a look at the various things, and I noticed that our database server, which is a separate entity, was pegged at 100% utilization. And that means that there were an awful lot of requests waiting to be serviced. Just to give you an idea of how much work the server does, I've been doing some performance analysis this week, and just yesterday, the 26th, our database was polled or asked to bring up a call sign 893,000 times. That was just yesterday. Yesterday alone. And when I was investigating this, I took a look, and what I needed to know was, well, how many times does the database server get hit when the call sign is looked up? Let me tell you, it's more than 800,000 times. In fact, when I looked at it last weekend, every call sign lookup was hitting the database 59 times. I know that's hard to believe, but there's a lot of things that go on in the background of the website, and if you take 50 as a round number times 800,000, almost a million, suddenly you can see that database server was pretty busy. And in analyzing what goes on a web page, basically when someone pulls up a web page, I dump a tremendous amount of information out there, and that's the problem. I was putting too much information. The logbook display by itself was accounting for more than a dozen calls to the database. Now that I've taken that out, the database is returning. Call signs are coming back in way less than a second, many of them less than a tenth of a second. So I did identify the source of the performance. May have to let it break here just a moment. And so now that we've done that, our performance is running, and it's very quick. The logbooks still work, as you know. It's just the summaries we don't have. I need to come up with a new method to display the summary that doesn't query the database in real time. The old summary used to hit the database hard, and it would literally go into a database that contains more than 12 million records and say, well, how many is for this guy? How many is for that guy? Well, what, you know, it was a tremendous amount of processing. So what I'm going to have to do is come up with a method that that caches it in a more efficient manner so we don't have to hit the database so hard. With that, I'm rewriting the database as we speak. The database, the original design of it, did not do well in terms of resource utilization. It basically overloaded the server from day one. It just, over time, as the database got larger, the loads got more and more intolerable, so it got to the point to where it tipped over. So I expect that within the next month, I will bring the new second generation logbook online. It's going to have all the information. It's not going to lose any of your existing QSOs or anything. Everything's going to be ported over, but the new system will provide that logbook summary page. There are some other things going on as well that we'll talk about a little bit later about our mapping functions, that is the Google Maps. We'll save that for a few minutes. And you asked also about QSL cards and eQSL cards. It's a good idea, and tying it to the QRZ database, we need to examine that a little more closely to see how we can work with some of the existing services like EQSL.net. We're planning on tying our database in with theirs somehow. We haven't really finalized all that yet, so stay tuned, and we'll keep that going. So let me turn it back to Susie, or maybe I'll turn it back to Joe, W2FED, in case there's any follow-up, and then back to Susie. This is AA7BQ.
Okay, thank you so much, Fred, for answering that. And let me ask Joe, W2FED, does that answer your question, and do you have any follow-up questions for Fred?
Roger, it answers my questions totally. The only thing is, the problem with the logbook summary, have you thought about indexing maybe some of the operators when they go in, like this DX contest that's coming up this weekend? Would it be possible, something to consider, if you could index some of the operators so it wouldn't search the whole data field and tie up the service? Something to consider. And as far as the QSL cards, a lot of people post their QSLs onto their profiles, and I've established something using a Facebook account with, I just like to meet people from all over the world, and when I meet somebody, I look them up on QRZ.com, I take the QSL and actually copy it over and put it in my own QSL album on my Facebook. So I kind of bypass the EQSL process, and if somebody puts a nice QSL on their profile, and it's worked pretty well. I met some really fantastic people, and we kind of like fudged our own QSL system of having electronic QSL cards. But it would be fascinating if it could be part of the QRZ.com program. Fred, thank you very much for all your time. You answered a lot of my questions. Have a fantastic night. This is W2FED. Back to the net.
Well, thanks very much, Fred and Joe, for commenting and talking about that. And it made me want to ask one question about that. Do you, Fred, normally take hold of all the operations on QRZ.com? Do you field all the problems, or do you have people behind you that also help you? It seems as though you have a hands-on approach to things, and when Joe asked your question, it seemed as though you were right up there and know what the problem was.
Okay, Susie, yeah, thank you, and thanks again to Joe. We'll take some of your suggestions into consideration as we're working. I am the technical person behind QRZ, and all the programming I do strictly myself. I'm also in charge of all the business operations, such as advertising and subscriptions and things like that. We do have a network of volunteers, about 20 people in all, that handle a lot of the end-user problems, so the people that have forgotten their passwords and need help getting their pages set up on QRZ. We've got volunteers that help with, we call them DX helpers, that help people from foreign countries get their call signs in. And we couldn't really do it without the volunteers. They handle the user end of it, the user problems with operating the site, but none of the volunteers get into the back end, into the software, the programming, the servers, etc. I do all that by myself. And I'm also guilty of not having documented a great deal of it. But I try and write my software so that it's at least understandable. I have to, because sometimes I go back in there after a couple of years and I can't remember what was I thinking when I wrote that. So anyway, I hope that answers it for you, Susie.
Well, it certainly does, Fred. Thanks so much. This is N1SUZ, and we'll continue with our comments and questions. The next one up is from Bill, VE3MEW. Bill, welcome aboard and welcome back. Come on aboard right now with your questions or your comments.
Yeah, N1SUZ, VE3MEW. Good evening, Suzanne, and good evening to everybody on the net here. And good day to Fred, A7BQ. I had that call came up today, and I looked it up on QRZ.com. That was interesting, some reading there. Anyway, I'll direct my question to you, Fred, and keep it short and sweet if I can. I live in Peterborough, Ontario, about 95 miles east of Toronto. But we have an amateur radio club here, and I am the trustee and the holder of all the club call signs. And one of them is BE3RB. And we use that on field day and a few times on other contests and whatnot. And that call sign shows up on QRZ.com. And some people have worked it, and they have wanted to put in the QSL information or whatever it was that they worked it on QRZ on the logbook. Now, here's the problem. I'm the person who looks after that call sign on the QRZ.com, but I am unable to interact with that logbook for VE3RB. I can do it for my own call sign. I can go in there and do whatever I want with the logbook and do wonderful things with it, but not for VE3RB. And so when I wrote in a question about that to the administrators or whoever they were, I was told to go to the forums. Okay, I went to the forums. I discovered a whole bunch of other people had the same problem, but there wasn't apparently a solution. So if you go to VE3RB on QRZ.com, you'll see I have a little write-up there on not being able to interact with the logbooks of people who want to register having worked BE3RB, and I can't confirm or anything else what they've done. So I just wondered if there's any possible way that I could be, or myself or anybody else, could be enabled to work with more than just our own personal call sign when it comes to managing the logbook spread. Back to you, BE3MEW.
Okay, Bill, thanks for your question. And you just made a good case for logbook version 2, in which the logbook version 2 that I'm working on right now allows any user to designate other people as authorized users of the logbook. So that's going to help things out a lot. And while you were talking, I added you as an authorized user of VE3RB. So if you go to the website now and go to your logbook, you should see there in the left-hand side a little drop-down box, and VE3RB will be in the box now, so you should be able to go into that. So I hope that helps you out, and please be patient, everyone, with the logbook, because of the thing that Bill just mentioned here is one of the reasons that I'm rewriting it. To include a bunch of neat new features, and that'll be happening pretty soon. So back to you, Sue. This is AA7BQ.
Well, thank you very much, Fred, and thank you, Bill, for your question. And let me bring you back and see if that answered your question. Come on back, and if you have any more additional questions or comments for Fred, feel free.
N1SUZB3MEW. No, he did a wonderful job of answering that. I appreciate him adding me on as being able to work with that. I'm the one in charge of that call sign and a couple others for the club, but that's the only one we're likely going to get people wanting to register a call with, or that they have worked it and so on. That's the only one that goes around internationally. So I appreciate that, and that answers my question, and I just thinking back to the runaround I got before when I wrote in a few times for emails, and I got shuttled to the forum, and then I go to the forum and for QRZ.com, and I find out that there's a whole bunch of other people got the same problem. So anyway, okay, thanks, Suzanne. Back to that V3MEW.
Well, thanks very much, Bill, for asking that question, and thank you, Fred, for answering it and also handling it, so now that Bill can get on there and handle that particular call sign. So Gordon, please come aboard and with your comment.
Well, thank you very much, Susie, and thank you, Fred. Gordon here, KY6V. I don't have any questions, at least yet, for Fred. I want to throw some accolades in his direction. Fred, the South Cars organization here, particularly on the digital side, started a couple of years ago giving amateur tests right here on our server. I don't mean the test, but the learning process, the teaching process of what is need to be known to answer these questions to take the test. And starting back in the early first quarter of 2010, when we first got this rolling, we started with the technician class, and then we followed with the general class, and then we followed with the extra class. And then in 2011, we started to repeat it all over, but we started with the International Morse Code in the first quarter, followed by the the other license classes. And my point here, let me buy a nickel for just a second. My point here is that we have been steering all of our classmates, and they have been sizable in number, and the rewards have been great, friend. But we have been steering them to your QRZ practice test. We have found it just to be outstanding, the way that it's presented, the way that it can be used over and over again if somebody is having difficulty. We've had a whole slew of students that have taken every exam sheet that you have to offer for a particular class and went down and aced their exam. Heads up, Fred, and muchas gracias, as they say in Miami. Very appreciative. KY6V, back to you, Fred. Over.
Well, thank you, Gordon. I appreciate that. Hand testing has always been very popular on the site. Every time I go out into the field, someone will come up to me and thank me for helping them with their achievement. The one that you're seeing on the website now is the third edition, the third version that I've written. And this third version does something that the previous two never accomplished, and that is it keeps track of the questions that you've answered correctly and doesn't re-ask you those questions. So if you stick with it, it will eventually take you through the entire syllabus, and it will also show you what areas that you need to study in and even allow you to study only in that area and take tests only in that area. So I've had some educators tell me that it's really a great leap forward. The only complaint that I've had about the new system is that it is required that you log in now in order to take the tests, which means that non-hams will have to establish an ID with QRZ. It doesn't cost anything, and we do accept everyone. But the reason for that is that in order to keep track of the user and keep track of what scores what achievements they've made, we have to be able to assign them a user ID. So that's really the only reason for that. So anyhow, I'm glad to hear that it's working for you, Gordon, and for all the students and all the people that have passed exams. And congratulations. One of the things that I'm very proud of really is to help that many people.
At least I hope so. Susie, you've been there from the start almost. What are your thoughts? KY6V, back to Net.
Well, thanks very much, Gordon, and thank you, Fred, again for answering and commenting. And yes, Gordon, I have to say that our program for licensing is wonderful. And our new format that you developed for us, where we picked out questions, the percentage of the questions to cover, really works out well, where we can do some research and actually give some background to the questions so that the new students can understand what they're learning. And I have to say it's worked out well for me. I got my general's license while studying under Mike, CDQ. And I think a lot of students have been very successful. But we always recommend, as we're progressing through the class, to go to QRZ.com and start taking the licensing exam questions there, because it's free. Basically, there are so many programs out there that you need to pay for. But fortunately and generously, QRZ offers those tests and exams online so we can practice. And it sounds pretty exciting, though, that they can keep track of the questions that you've already answered so that you can actually get through the whole pool of questions without repeats. And let me throw it back to you, Fred, AA7BQ, and let me ask you how you went about and put that on the website. Did you have to enter in all those questions yourself as part of a software program, or did you get something from the FCC or ARRL to help you with that? So let me send it back to you, AA7BQ, Fred.
Okay, Susie. The questions come from the NCVEC, the National Coordinators for Volunteer Exam Coordinators, and the NCVEC site publishes all the test questions. They publish them in Word format and a plain text format, amongst others. And I simply download a copy of that. Once a year I have to do it because the questions change. And I brought that into my Unix system here and basically took the thing apart line by line and wrote a program that would read the entire test, spitting out the questions one by one instead of just all of them on one page. And so it was sort of a two-step process. The first thing was to write a program to read the questions off of a sheet of paper, so to speak, off of a file, create the individual questions, stuck those in the database, which is new now this year. I'm using the database for that. And then once the questions were all in the database, then I wrote a program to conduct the test, and the program selects then the individual questions out of the database and keeps track of the scores and other things like that. It took, oddly enough, it wasn't that large of a process in terms of, a lot of the programs that I write here in PRC take quite a while, the logbook being the most complicated. I probably put a month or more of engineering time into the first version, and I'm about 3 weeks into the second version right now. By comparison, the test program, I wrote the whole thing in about and got it going in about 3 days. Back to you. This is AE7BQ.
Well, thank you, Fred. This is N1SUZ, and this is TNT Open Forum with an interview with Fred Lloyd, the founder and creator of QRZ.com. Well, Fred, I am really impressed with the 3-day write-up for that software program. But let me also ask you, do you think that there's a relationship between the Internet and all this new technology and ham radio? Do we really need to learn more about this kind of stuff in order to progress through the hobby, or do you think that the old tube radios and people who use those are just fine? It seems as though there's so much technology out there and advancing the hobby that you might feel a little left behind if you're not on that train. What do you think about that, Fred?
Well, my opinion about it is that ever since ham radio started, it's been a high-tech hobby. In the 1930s, it was a high-tech hobby. It had the most outstanding equipment available. Amateurs were using it, and it's been that way ever since its beginning. It's just that technology marches on, and ham radio follows along and helps move it forward as well. So I don't think anything's different in terms of the fact that ham radio is always encompassing and embracing new technology. The Internet is a game changer. It's definitely, you know, historically speaking, one of those things that ranks right up there with the invention of the wheel or the invention of the printing press. The Internet is a total game changer, and it has added something to ham radio that nothing before it ever has. I mean, it's much more important than, for instance, the invention of the transducers as being a paradigm-shifting event in world history. How does it help ham radio? How does it hurt ham radio? I think we're still trying to figure that out. I think that in some ways it's making ham radio more popular, because now people can get the sense that there's a lot more of us out there. Before the Internet, you had some sense of the fact that there's ham radio going on, but you would never really know the scale unless you had some experience. For example, here in the Phoenix area in Arizona, there's about 11,000 hams here in Arizona. There's no way you would have known that before the Internet came along, or before the call book was made available in a way that it was easy to figure that out. The Internet makes that possible. It makes it possible for you to figure out that there's a ham living 3 blocks away from you that you didn't know about before. And that information is available both for hams and non-hams alike. So I think it is helping the hobby by making it so that you don't feel like you're the only guy. You don't feel like you're the only person you're not so isolated anymore. You're part of a much larger organization. Now, on QRZ, there's 1.2 million call signs in our database and 450,000 registered users. When you join QRZ, you're joining that group. That wasn't possible before, and now it is. So I think it's making ham radio more popular from that standpoint. Let me take a quick break And while it's making it more popular, it's also it's making it easier to use. It doesn't help one underlying problem that we have in our hobby, and that is its appeal to younger people. We have a problem there, and it's not a problem that's going away. And our average user on the website is tends to be more towards middle age. There are some young people. There's young people getting licensed every day, but not nearly enough of them. And the reason for that is pretty clear, and that is that when we were kids, talking on a two-way radio was really something special. Really, you know, being able to use a phone or a radio in your car was something that only very few people could do. Well, that's not the case anymore. Now, grade school kids are running around with cell phones and texting, and two-way radio to them seems antiquated. How do we keep this hobby going? I don't have the answer for that. You know, because when the majority of us are gone, it's not clear to me what's going to be left. So that's a question that, you know, that I'll leave to other people to answer. But if QRZ can help it along any way, you can bet your bottom dollar that I'll be doing that, because it's something, the new blood, that the hobby really needs. Back to you, Susan, and off of my soapbox on that topic, AA7BQ.
Okay, Fred, thank you very much. And yes, it's not a soapbox you're on. It really is a concern of almost all the ham radio operators that I know of, because we want to keep this hobby alive, and it is a problem with the younger people. But I see some of that solved with people who volunteer in schools and after-school programs with clubs, and I know of one club in North Dakota that I contacted that K9 Digs, she hosts a nice after-school program, and they let the kids use her radio equipment. And if more people would volunteer in their schools, I think we would have something happen there. But even QRZ.com, you know, kids are into the Internet. QRZ.com is an Internet-based system, so maybe in a way that QRZ.com can help without really having to do much else than just be there. But let me ask you, we'll go back to designing and creating QRZ.com. Were there any obstacles you needed to overcome to get the database together? And did the FCC have any questions about what we're using the database for initially? I'll send it back to you, AA7BQ from N1SUZ.
Well, to answer that question, it's a resounding no. The FCC never asked me anything. I didn't order the data from them. It was actually distributed by another government bureaucracy known as the National Technical Information Service, which NTIS, a big library of data. And basically, I just filled out a form, sent them a check, and the tape arrived in the mail many moons later. But no, they never asked me a thing. Over the years, I've gotten to know some of the people at the FCC through email and contact on the website. I'm pleased that I stay in contact with Riley Hollingsworth, for example, who used to be their general counsel and now is retired. But nevertheless, we've maintained a cordial relationship from that standpoint. But there's never been any real official communication between the QRZ and the FCC. That said, I really don't know of any reason there should be or would be. There's not really much there, in my opinion. So hope that answers your question. Back to you.
Well, it sure does, Fred. Just curious, because in this day and age of high security, I wondered how it was back then. But let me break with you for a moment, and we have a question from WQ1I, who writes in the text box that he'd like to ask you something. And we also have Gordon, KY6V, after that. So let me bring Paul aboard in WQ1I. Come on aboard with your question or comment for Fred.
Thank you, Suzanne. WQ1I here, Danbury, Connecticut. And good evening, Fred. It's a pleasure talking to you, and it's a very interesting topic tonight. Apparently, you're a very popular guy. You've drawn a big crowd here on the server. I've been looking at our users list from time to time, and we've got over 40 stations connected, and that's definitely higher than usual, and there's a lot more people listening, too. I did want to agree with Suzanne about the question of getting younger people interested in the hobby, and I believe a lot of it is a matter of exposure. Field Day does a lot for that. But my personal experience is I have a kid who works for me. He's a 23-year-old chemist, so he's grown up with computers and cell phones and all that kind of stuff. Well, one day I showed him the Echolink app on the iPhone and got onto the Ireland conference server and connected to a station in Scotland, and he was just absolutely blown away. So even someone who is used to this worldwide communications can still be find ham radio interesting, because it is different. And I'll just drop it for 1 second, and I have my question for you, Fred. And that is, my questions were of a statistical nature. I was curious that on a high-traffic day, which I imagine would be during contests and things like that, how many stations you can have connected to QRZ at any one time. And I was also curious if you knew how many call sign lookups a year actually get made on QRZ? And again, thanks for coming aboard. It's been really interesting, and we appreciate you coming on tonight. WQ1I.
Okay, thanks for that, Paul. The how many lookups per day? I don't really know. Exactly. However, I started counting them the other day, as luck would have it, and it looks like 750,000 would be probably a pretty good average. 750,000 call times a day on an average day. That would be a weekday. The big days are Saturday and Sunday, and it probably goes up to nearly 1 million call times per day that get looked up. I don't know how many are looked up on, you know, on the basis of an entire year. But there we average about 60,000 unique individuals a day coming to the website. That's a tremendous number. And about 13 to 15 million web pages come off the site every day. I know those numbers don't necessarily add up if you're back there doing the math right now, but it's a little bit hard to determine. We get hit, for example, constantly by web robots that are indexing our pages, and we're hit by people using logbook programs such as Ham Radio Deluxe and DX Keeper and who knows what that access our pages as well, and that runs up the count. The server is really busy, and I'm sorry, I think I may have forgotten the other part of your question. Let me turn it right back to you quickly, Paul, AA7BQ.
Okay, Fred, WQ1I. No, you've got it. I was curious as to how many stations could be connected or on a busy day, not just lookups, but actually connected. You know, you go there, you hook up, and you just leave it on QRZ all day. But, yeah, 750,000 lookups a day, that's quite impressive. And if I really do need to know how many year that comes out to, I could probably figure that out. But thank you for that, Fred. And we'll throw it back to Suzanne, WQ1I.
Well, thanks, Paul, for your question. And thanks, Fred, for fielding that question. And our next comment up is from Gordon, KY6V. Gordon, come on aboard with your question and your comment.
Thank you, Susie. I'll try and make it short and succinct. Fred, I'm loving every moment of this. Loved your comment about the group that comes in and steals your thunder, ties up your bandwidth, and all of that nonsense. We have that problem, too. Raleigh Hollinsworth is a South Cars member and has been for quite some time. Just a very astute and neat individual. I would ask you this question, if you don't mind fielding it. There are a number of us in the administrative side of this hullabaloo with South Cars that keep the databases and so on like you do with QRZ. The classes that we put on that I mentioned earlier, you know, we have somebody that comes on and said, hey, I just upgraded from extra here last Thursday. And then we want to change that status on our roster, but we use you as the Bible until it appears on QRZ or we find that it is already posted on FCC. We won't make that change so that we always have a way to track back. Now, it has been our understanding or what we've seen that once it hits the database on FCC, it's about a day, maybe 24 hours before it hits the page on QRZ, and that works very, very well. Can you explain where you're getting your data from and this 24-hour situation for everybody that's assembled here tonight? And would you care to expound on the fact that the database for QRZ is primarily U.S.-oriented? And that foreign stations need to take that extra step to get included. And how are you working that out, Fred? Over.
Okay, Gordon. I wrote your questions down here, I had a follow-up on Paul's question. Paul asked me how many simultaneous people can log into QRZ and hang around. The short answer is there's no limit. When you're sitting on someone's web page, there's no real communication going back and forth. It's only when you make a request. Our server runs about 500 simultaneous copies of itself. So it can simultaneously take 500 requests at the same instant. And if another person comes in, like we have 501, that person just has to wait until the person ahead of him has exited the queue. So there's no real limit from that standpoint, and we found that 500 seems to take care of the load most of the time. So 500 persons at once, but in terms of people standing there, and when I say at once, that's in an instant. There can be really an unlimited number of people browsing around, but I keep track of those things. Anyway, on to Gordon, your questions about the delay on the FCC updates. The FCC is a big government bureaucracy, and they're not the best when it comes to being data processing. Their data processing expertise isn't the best, let's say that. And they tend, it takes, after the data goes into their system, let's say a VEC input. The VECs have direct input into the system. Let's say a VEC makes a change to your license with an upgrade, goes right into the FCC's computer. The FCC then gathers all their data and produces a download. Their website comes online pretty quick, but then the download that they produce, they put it out on an FTP server available for all to download sometime after that, probably. I think they do it every night, but it's usually up to 24 hours after something has been changed. So they make an entire download, and they do it in two parts. They have the download. Once a week, they do it. They make a file available that contains everything, and then every night, they have a file available that contains all the changes from the previous day. So our server goes to the FCC and looks and gets the daily updates every single day. So now that we've waited a day to make the update, it can be, just because there's a sliding time window there, another day before we get a hold of it. And so that's why when a VEC inputs new data into the computer, it shows up on the FCC right away. Sometime after that, they make it available. And then within 24 hours after that, QRZ grabs the data. So that's why it takes 2 days, maybe even three, because of sliding windows and because of some VECs may not enter the new data in immediately. But we do get it. We get every single bit of it, and that's why it takes that long. You also asked, Gordon, about the orientation. I'll take the orientation of the data being primarily in the United States. I'll take that question right after the quick break. Yes, you know, most of the call sign data in the world is not kept on computers. There are some countries where it's kept on 3x5 index cards in a shoebox under the front doorstep of the communications minister. We can't have the data for the other countries. Some countries consider it it's private. They don't have the same open laws that we have in the United States. Some countries, such as Germany, leave it up to the organizations such as the DARC, which is the Germany's equivalent to the ARRL. The DARC cut an exclusive deal with a call book supplier, so that I don't know what was involved in that deal, but basically they only give the data to the supplier, and they won't give us a copy, for example. And so the only two countries that we get regular data from automatically are Canada and the United States, and in Canada we do about once a month. So all the other foreigners that come in have to enter in their own call sign. I wish there was some other way of doing it, but truth be told, there is no worldwide database in existence. For every country, there's that country's database, which may or may not be kept on computer. I hope that answers the question, and I'll turn it back to Suzanne for some moderation there, AA7BQ.
Well, thanks very much, Fred. And Gordon, let me just ask you if there's any follow-up to that. I'll send it back to you to see if there is.
No, I think I'm pretty well set. Thank you, Susie. Fred, I wasn't aware of that. Well, I wasn't aware of two things, that the FCC had direct input. I thought they shipped it off to the FCC organization, and then it was entered. So that's good news. I was also under the impression that Canada stations had to input individually to you. Are you saying that if they do not do that on their own, they would automatically be picked up on a monthly basis? Did I read that correctly, Fred? Over.
Yes, Gordon, that's true. They can input it themselves. However, when I go and get the database, which is more or less once a month, it will overwrite whatever they wrote. So there's some care to be exercised there, over.
All right, that's good news. Thank you very much for that, Fred. Suzanne, back to you. Grand show, KY6V.
Well, thank you very much, Gordon. And we are on TNT Open Forum tonight with an interview with QRZ.com creator and founder Fred Lloyd. So thank you so much for tonight, Lloyd, Fred Lloyd, for coming and talking with us. And I know there are a lot of stations out there that are listening and are really enjoying the program tonight. There's a lot of nice comments in our text box, too. So let me just take a break here and open the floor for any additional comments and questions for you. If there's anyone out there who would like to ask something, please come aboard now with your suffix only, please.
Whiskey Kilo Delta.
Sierra United November.
Jim, come on aboard with your question or your comment.
Thanks, Susie, once again. Here's a question that I have on my mind. The QRZ logging program or logging function has come up a couple of times. And I'm wondering, I use Logbook of the World, like a lot of people do, because of the awards, that sort of thing. And perhaps I should know the answer to this, but I'm wondering if QRZ is going to or does have any awards of its own, and what is the status, and how about, what relationship between the ARRL and QRZ, and why can't those two possibly interface? I hope that's not a tough question or an inappropriate question, but let me just pose it just the same and see if Fred would feel that one. Susie, back to you, KJ4WKD. Thank you.
Okay, Jim, I'll take that on. The QRZ Awards are something that we want to do, and the reason that we haven't been able to do it so far is because the logbook program hasn't reached the level of maturity necessary to make that work. It's nothing that any of the users haven't done. It's simply that I have failed to write the necessary software to go in and calculate how many contacts each person has had, whether or not they're confirmed, and so on and so forth. It's quite a big job, actually. I'm working on making that happen, and when it does, we will be offering some awards. Regarding other organizations such as the AWRL and Logbook of the World, I'm pretty confident that we're never going to attach to them. And the reason I say that is because as an organization, the AWRL is very, very protective of their awards business. They do generate quite a bit of, it's a big part of the AWRL, the contesting and awards, and they're sort of jealous of it. Their requirements for what I would call at times military-grade encryption and certificate, digital certificates and what have you, in order to log something in their logbook, really speaks volumes as to what, you know, how eager they are to make sure that it's to put their sort of good housekeeping seal of approval on it. We're a little bit more relaxed here at QRZ. My theory about all this is that it's a hobby. And as a hobby, everyone seeks to make it for themselves as much as they want it to be for themselves. If I were to cheat, for example, and submit false records so that I could get a certificate that hangs on my wall and says that I contacted, 350, I'm just kidding, countries, what would that, how pleased would I be with that? Because it's not telling the truth, it's saying that I, cheated an organization and a brotherhood into issuing me a certificate that means what exactly. So I just don't think that awards need necessarily to be as strictly policed as perhaps the AWRL does. That said, it's not an issue of QRZ versus the AWRL. We have a cordial relationship with them, although we don't really talk very much to each other. It's all really about the AWRL. They don't really share their data with anyone, I think, as you know, and I don't really think that they're going to change that because they've had such good success with it thus far.
And this is N1SUZ, and thank you again, Fred. We're all really enjoying hearing these answers and also being able to ask you questions, which is a treat because you're usually the man behind the scenes. But let's get back to the logging programs because we've been talking a little bit about the logging programs and whatnot, and there are plenty of logging programs for amateur radio operators. QRZ offers this service for free, and a great many hands take advantage of this. And I, in fact, log all my contacts directly on QRZ after I make them and then transfer them over to another log program. But there are other software designers who offer these programs like Aether, which is what I use for my Macintosh. Even though the logging program might come from another source, QRZ is frequently used with these programs to enter in contact information about the QSO. How do these programs interface with QRZ lookup information as part of their logging programs? Is that a software program in itself, and is that something that you had to have a hand in helping developing, Fred? This is N1SUZ, and I'm sending it to you, AA7BQ.
Okay. Yes, Stephen, there are a lot of programs that access QRZ. I'd say upwards of 25% or more of all of the incoming traffic into QRZ is traffic that's generated by programs that are asking the QRZ to provide data. That means programs instead of people. When I say person, I mean someone sitting in a browser typing in a call sign and getting the data back. Whereas a lot of call book programs, when you type in a call sign, that program will go to QRZ and look up the call sign and then take that data and use it to fill out the QSO entry. There are two different ways that a program can do this. One way is to simulate a browser, and your logbook program will simulate a browser, ask QRZ for the page full of data, and return that data, and then pick out the bits of information from amongst all the ads and the photos and the biography, pick out the information. That type of operation is known to programmers as screen scraping. It scrapes the data off the screen. The other way the data comes from QRZ is via a subscription interface that we have called XML, or we also call it the QRZ Logbook Data Interface. XML is a very, very high-speed, low-baggage type of data protocol, and we really like people to use that because it puts about a tenth of the load on the server as pulling up a web page does. As I mentioned earlier, it 30 or 40 database hits for every web page, and XML packet only takes 3 or 4 hits to the database. So it's high performance, high reliability, and high speed. What more would you want? The problem is, it's a subscription interface. It's the subscription set is $29.95 per year, and a lot of people resist that. And then in other cases, they're not even aware that their program is using the screen scraping method, and that has been a source of some concern for people over the years. There's been a lot of back and forth. Every time I change the website, for example, screen scraping programs, they die because they can't actually read the data. They're depending on it being in a certain spot on the page. So XML doesn't have that problem, and that's why I recommend it to everyone. Let me turn it back to you, Susie, for any follow-up.
Well, that's really interesting, and I didn't really realize the XML program was a better feature. I know that a lot of people sign up for that premium feature for other reasons. I think there's less ads, or I'm not quite sure how it was promoted. But do you know by chance the percentage of people that do pay for your service as opposed to just do the free service?
Well, we have several different offerings for pay. Some have to do with removing the ads from the site. Some of our offerings give you the XML data, and there's another offering that lets you download the whole database, basically copy the CD-ROM. A subscriber is a person that subscribed to any of them, and we have 450,000 registered users at QRZ. We have about, I'll say, 5,000 subscribers. So that's maybe one in. I don't want to do the math there. It's a very low percentage of our users actually pay QRZ anything. But those that do, we make sure they get the best service. And if it's ever necessary, the paid subscribers get priority requests in the queue for the data. So it works out great for everybody. And at $29.95 a year, most people will agree that's not a lot of money when you look at, compared to other things in your life. Back to you, Susie, AA7BQ.
Well, thanks very much, Fred. This is N1SUZ. And I'm curious as to if something went wrong. Now, I know that I use QRZ when I initially enter in my contacts, but I also have a program that I use just in case. And, of course, there's always a paper log, but I'm not very good at updating my paper log yet. I expect to do that. If QRZ went down, is there a backup that you can instill? Is there some way to get that information back up if the whole system went down so that we don't have to worry? Back to you, Fred.
Yeah, Susan. QRZ is hosted by the web complex at Amazon.com. They have what's known as cloud computing there, and QRZ is a client of Amazon. And when I say the QRZ server, I'm actually talking about a bunch of different machines and a bunch of different storage mechanisms. Some of the storage that we have is kept automatically backed up by Amazon into their cloud. So, for instance, I don't back up the database server. Amazon does it for me at regular, daily intervals. So that's, and the other part of it is that our data is sort of spread out. All the photographs, for instance, are stored in a different place, and the call signs are stored in a different place. And, and logbooks in a different place. And by having it spread out, you've got redundancy. For example, if there's a hardware failure, we don't care. We don't lose anything from a hardware failure because we simply start up another instance of our website. It's not tied to any particular machine. So we were pretty well protected. I think that people that should download their logbooks regularly, so we'll have a copy of it with them. I really do recommend that. I sort of specifically don't guarantee anything in terms of longevity or in terms of, you know, fail-safe backup. We're not really in that business. But from a practical standpoint, we've never really lost anything. And Amazon is pretty much the best there is out there in terms of that. So we're sort of playing to the numbers, but they're on our side, and things are going well. Back to you. This is 87BQ.
Well, this is N1SUZ. Well, thank you, Fred. I feel a little bit more confident then. But let me ask you one more question before we move on. Now, the cloud system, we hear a lot about that now because that's what Macintosh users are almost being forced to do, to put their information in the cloud. But I was wondering how it seems to me that if you're operating on the cloud system already, that has been around for a while, a lot longer than I realized. Is that an older type of system? Not older, but has it been around for a little bit of time, or are you referring to a new way of updating your data and saving it?
Well, QRZ hopped onto the cloud last January, so we haven't been on it all that long. Prior to last January, I actually owned the servers that QRZ operated on, and they're in my garage right now, just collecting dust. I also owned the database machines, all the storage, all the disk drives. I was responsible for my own backup. And if anything ever broke down, I would have to hop in the car and drive downtown to the data center to work on the hardware. And that's basically the reason that I decided to go with the cloud, is because I really can't afford to be responsible for going to where the servers are located and working on them. And so, as it turns out, it's a much better idea to lease a server from somebody else that has people and staff on site that can do that type of repair. So people have been renting servers for years now. There's nothing new about that. But and in many respects, the cloud is the same thing. You rent space on a server. The difference is that when you're in the cloud, you really don't know where your server is. You really don't know what kind of server you have. The only thing you know is that you're given a login, and you can, and when you log into that to that site or that port, it looks like a server, it acts like a server, and it does everything you need it to do, but all the details of the hardware and all that are taken care of by somebody else. Cloud refers to the same thing when it comes to storage. It used to be I would worry about how many disk drives do I have? Are they backed up? Do I have a duplicate of each one? What's the capacity of this drive? One moment, please. And I used to worry about all these things having to do with the physical disks. Well, I don't have to worry about that anymore. Now, with the cloud, I just tell Amazon, here's the data, store it for me, and I'll let you know if I need it. And Amazon does that for me. And it's like having a disk drive that is an unlimited size, and it's backed up, and it's available all over the planet, from local access points, and it's and so that's what it really what's going on in the background is they have a bunch of servers, and they are simply keeping lots of copies of your data out there, and they're taking care of all the backup for you, and by being in the cloud, it means that you don't have to worry about any of that. You get the data when you need it, and you hand it to them, and they hand it back to you when you ask for it. Back to you, Susie, 87BQ.
Well, thanks for explaining that, Fred, because I've been a little hesitant about going into the cloud. But I think, of course, that's where everyone is moving to, actually, with their data, so it's probably inevitable anyway. But it's nice to know that that's where QRZ is backed up, too. And it's nice to know that Amazon has it, too, one of the bigger servers. So thank you for answering that question. And before we move on, And let me break here for a moment and see if there's any other stations that would like to ask any questions or make any comments. If there are any stations, please come aboard now with your suffix only, please.
6, Victor.
Very good. Net recognizes KY6V. Gordon, come on aboard.
Fred, I don't know how to ask this. You know, everybody's been so polite with their questions, and I'm going to try to be polite, but it's a touchy, sensitive area, and I'll try to be as politically correct as I can. You know, we come from a land of the free and free speech. We have the right to have our own opinions. It has been my observation through the years, and I can tell you I was one of the primaries that started this VOIP digital contingent of Southcars. Southcars really has been going for over 40 years on HF, Fred. But we needed some expansion into some of the newer technology. And I'll tell you, the naysayers out there were enormous in size, vigorous in their verbiage. And when I started this in 2007, actually had our first net in January of 2008, early January, I posted a invitation for everybody on your article format area of QRZ, and you should have seen the lambasting that we got. I will be very honest with you that we had more positive thinkers than negative thinkers, and we won in the long run. But what is your opinion on this? Just let it run the way that it runs. I know that's hard to control, but I'd sure like to hear something from you. Over.
Well, Gordon, the one thing you can count on the internet is a variety of opinion, and you can also count on no matter how innocuous your subject material is, there will be a contingent of people that will jump up and decry it as the worst thing that's ever taken place. I've, over the years, have learned a lot about human behavior on the internet, and, you know, some people thrive on being oppositional. They will simply, it doesn't matter what you have to say, they're going to find, you know, in their mind they're playing devil's advocate, but what really is going on is they just enjoy ticking people off. And the sooner you realize that, the better off, I'm sorry, not you particularly, but it's just the sooner one realizes that, the better off they are. I've learned that nothing makes them more indignant than ignoring them. It's hard sometimes, especially when they've called you out and called you, you know, whatever, for your opinion. But these people are craving attention, and a lot of times I'll just wait after I post an article and someone comes in and says, oh, that's a load of hooey and what have you. I'll just wait, because invariably someone will come in and make my point for me, and I just love it when that happens. People have complained to me for editing their words when I thought necessary, and they said, oh, well, this is an abridgment of free speech, and I'm going to contact my lawyer and all that. Well, I encourage them to do that, because nothing's going to make me happier than to see them waste their money on a lawyer. Because it is free speech. It's my speech, quite frankly. I'm the one that has the free speech. And, you know, and the person that's complaining has free speech as well. They can start their own website and say whatever they want. So that's my cut on it. Back to you, Gordon,
A7BQ. Right on, Professor. That's exactly what I did when this all got started. You know, I just sat back and I wouldn't answer them, and, you know, the field of other guys answered the questions for me, and we won. You know, Psychology 101. I had a good friend of mine that was a college professor, and he says, Gordon, you know, there's something to do with this internet business. A person can stay home in their pajamas. They can become mean and cantankerous. They can say anything that they want. They release their inhibitions because they're not looking somebody else in the face. And I'll leave it with that. Suzanne, sorry for stirring that one up, but I just had to do it. KY6V, back to you, Susie.
Well, this is N1SUZ, and it's 46 minutes past the hour. And Gordon, no problem. I thought it was a great question, and yes, we all tend to tiptoe over some of those things, but it's good to be able to ask them. And Fred, thanks for answering that honestly. So let me break with you, and let's go back to QRZ.com for a minute. And there are a lot of changes that have happened to QRZ since 1993. What do you think are some of the more important features on QRZ.com, in your opinion, Fred? This is N1SUZ, and I'm sending it to AA7BQ.
Okay. A lot of people would, especially those that frequent the QRZ forums, would say that the forums are very, very important. And I would agree, they are very, very important, but they represent perhaps 10% of all the traffic coming into QRZ. So by default, the most important thing at QRZ is and always has been the call sign lookup. There's nothing quite like talking on the radio and being able to visualize someone and actually seeing their picture on the computer screen while you're talking to them, and that is the bread and butter of QRZ. That is the deal. That's why people come to us, is because we have the Facebook of amateur radio, is really what this is. The forums and all are very interesting and sometimes ridiculous, but other times very helpful. But I think the most important things we have going for us, besides the call sign database, certainly are the testing for people to join the hobby. The online swap meet to buy and sell amateur radio gear, and that's about it. Those are the big things, and those are the things that I work the hardest at, making sure they perform well and are as reliable as possible. Back to you.
Well, thanks for answering that for me, Fred. This is N1SUZ. One of those features that I kind of get a kick out of is the map feature. I like to see, when I look up a call sign of somebody that I talk to, how far away they are. Can you tell me how you've developed that to be so accurate?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Something came up today with respect to maps, and we'll talk about that. Mapping is very interesting. I first had to download a database from the federal government called the Tiger Line database, which comes from the Census Department, and it has geographical coordinates in it for all the streets and all the zip codes and all the addresses in the United States. It doesn't have exactly the geographic coordinates for your address, but there's a method to figure it out. And that was a project that took several days to figure out and finally get on to the website. And then I also extended that out to other countries by maintaining my own database of coordinates of other countries around the world. Most of them are approximated. For example, for a larger country, my database might only have one entry, and that being the center of the country. But we store everything in lat-long coordinates. There's a lat-long coordinate pair for every call sign in the database. And if you have two pairs of lat-long coordinates, there's just a simple math that will indicate what the distance is between those coordinates, and as long as both parties have entered the correct coordinates, then the data is going to come up accurate. But what happened this week is it was brought to my attention that Google Maps, the service that we use to display the mapping information, is about to implement daily limits on the number of maps that a website can show, and Google has put the limit up at 25,000. And then beyond that, they might want to charge for every 1,000 maps that your website uses. Well, my website is probably using 500,000 or more maps a day, so we've got a problem here. As I mentioned earlier, 2 days ago, we We did 890,000 lookups in one day. That could be more than $3,000 a day in Google charges. So I'm not sure what the solution to this problem is. Google has told us that they'll sell us a subscription to their service, which I'm not opposed to paying, except for the fact that they want $10,000 a year for that. Or I may have to reprogram the site to only bring up the maps on demand rather than by default. I still don't think that would get us under the $25,000 per day limit. So that problem just popped up today, and frankly, it caused a bit of concern, as maybe you can imagine. One way or the other, we'll get it going, though, because I think it is an extremely valuable feature, and all evidence is it's very popular. So that's my headache for today, Sue.
Well, I have to say that I know quite a few people do enjoy that feature. And it's actually taught me quite a bit about the geography of some of the countries that I've talked to and where they're located. Some of these call signs that I hear on the HF rig, I don't really quite know where they are. And it's very easy to look it up and find out where they are and actually get excited about how far away you can actually talk to somebody on HF. But thank you for answering that, and I hope that you solved that. It would be a shame. I know that I don't need to see the map every time I look up call signs, especially call signs that are local to me, but I do enjoy looking up the DX stations especially. But let me break with you, and let me open the floor up for any questions and comments that anybody may have. It's 53 minutes past the hour, and we're probably winding down. Fred Lloyd has been here with TNT tonight in an interview, and graciously we've taken quite a bit of his time. So let's see if there's any more comments or questions before we move on, and probably wrap up the show in a little bit. So anyone who would like to ask a question or make a comment, please come aboard now with your suffix only, please.
Victor, Queen Victor.
Lima, Charlie Bravo.
All right. The net recognizes Victor, Queen Victor, Chris, and Lima, Charlie Bravo, George. Chris, come on aboard. I'm glad to see you here tonight. This is N1SUZ, and Chris, the floor is yours.
Right. Quick question, and I caught it right on your last transmission. The number of hits that you get on a day, people who appreciate the service that you offer, it's currently, I think, free. And I think I heard the number sometime, well, I heard numbers between 500,000 and 1,000,000. For round numbers, because I don't have a calculator. 1,000,000 hits a day with all privileges to do whatever research, peripheral services at a charge of a penny a transaction, I think that would be a huge amount of income. Have you thought about that, sir? KB3VQZ.
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, I thought about that, and that would be super. You know, I have ads on the site that are from Google, and Google pays pretty well. They pay QRZ about 40 cents every time somebody clicks on an ad. If everybody that came to my site just clicked once on one of those ads, I could retire right now. About, I'd say on average, it's less than 1% of the people that come to the site ever click on the ad. According to Google, I'm not allowed to ask people to click either, because for some odd reason, they want the clicks to be what they call organic. But anyway, yeah, you know, when you start looking at the numbers, 500,000 a day or 1,000,000 a day a page hit. Yeah, if I had a penny for each one of those, it would be a really big thing. But it's not going to happen. It's a funny thing about being on the internet. Most of the content needs to be free in order to make it work, and the people that pay for the extras, they really are helping out everyone else that's not paying. But the advertisers also get a great benefit from it. Right now, we get about half of our income from the advertisers and the other half of our income from subscribers, and we're doing well. You know, I complain about Google asking $10,000 for the mapping interface, but to be honest with you, if it comes down to that, we'll probably have to do it, and we'll probably ask our users to consider helping us out on that. As far as raising the rates go, or forcing people to sign up with money, I can assure you that's not going to happen, because it just breaks the way the internet works. It breaks the way the system stays popular. But somehow, we'll make it work. We always, you know, I always thought it would be impossible to get this far, and not only did we get this far, but we overshot the goal. So we'll just keep on trying, one way or the other. It'll all work out in the end. Back to net control from AA7BQ.
Next on the list is George, KW4, Lima, Charlie, Bravo. George, come on aboard.
Well, Kathy, good evening, a great day. Sorry about that, Sue. A top of the evening to you and everyone on the net, and most of all, thank you, Fred, for spending part of your evening with us there. Hopefully you could get your legs uncrossed there before too long there. But I want to go back to about the whole first 15 minutes or so of when we got started out as internet and ham radio. And then also Gordon's question about the naysayers and all. But what I have found out, that the internet is playing a major role in these middle age people that's going in into nursing homes, private homes, it's giving them a venue to retain their dignity as a ham operator, through most of the remote stations. Are they able to check in on different nets and which they wasn't able to, earlier. They're too old to put up antennas. The body just won't work good enough for them to lug equipment around, and especially these places won't let them have it. So I'm thinking, with all the digital modes coming about, I think it's developing well hand in hand there. So just wanted to throw that in there. Let me drop it a moment there, and I'll come back with something else. Yeah, okay, bud. I don't know if you had the chance to view our website here on the VOIP side. We did talk earlier about the different classes that has been held. I took the extra class and was able to go to QRZ and take a practice test and keep going at it, I felt I knew what I needed to do, and I didn't have too much of a problem with the test. But if you do get the chance to spend any time on the website, maybe pick a podcast from each individual class and just listen in, a few minutes there, and we seem to offer a home style, a friendly group. Nobody is holier than thou, as far as in the training we was lax, and if you had to get down on a fifth or sixth grade level to explain what was going on and bring someone's thinking up especially math. I've always had problems with math, but the way everything was presented there was an excellent sight. So thank you again for mentioning the ads. I will definitely be clicking on some ads there. And I appreciate what you do and what you do for your fellow man. KW4 and ladies, keep me out of trouble here. KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo back to Annette Control, or if you have any type of comment.
Well, thank you so much, George, for that comment. And let me throw it back to Fred, see if he has any comments on it, too. Fred, AA7BQ, this is N1SUZ, back to you.
Well, I just want to say thank you, George. I appreciate the kind words. And, you know, every morning when I wake up, I only have one thing to do, and that's go to QRZ and check the email and start interacting with people and working on the website. And as a programmer, I enjoy every minute of it. I enjoy doing this job. I never really dread coming to work. In fact, my wife is somewhat concerned sometimes that I'd rather be doing QRZ than other things. So let me just say this. I think I'm the luckiest guy in the world to be here, and the fact that it does good for other people and that folks enjoy it, that just makes it all the better. So thank you, George. I appreciate those comments.
Well, thank you, Fred. And we think we're pretty lucky that you're there, too. So let me break with you, and I'm going to pick up Gordon, KY6V, who has a comment for you. Gordon, come on aboard.
Hey, thanks, Susie. KY6V here. I guess I'd ask you, Fred, you know, does this take you into the wee hours of the night? A lot of us here with South cars, it seems it turns out that way, too. But, you know, George mentioned math. I'm going to put a little lighter color on the subject here for a moment. When he did, I reached over to my Chinese hibiscus, Fred, and I rolled the beads up and down, and I said, and if I heard you right, that was 40 cents per advertisement click. At any rate, I used 40 cents. I want you to know that our membership here in South Cars by the end of the year is going to be very close to 12,000 members. So if they click twice a day, each one of them, on your site, you could make $9,600 a day. Now, that's $300,000 a month. And I can make this happen if you'll give me 10%. That'll give me $30,000, and I'd be very happy, Fred. Over.
Okay, Gordon, you just become my newest best friend. Yeah, it's amazing when you look at the numbers. I learned a long time ago to temper them all with realism, and you know, things turn out like they're supposed to turn out. And I'll just be honest with you, things are going well. I really can't complain. Yeah, they could be better, but hey, they're doing well, and I'm having a good time. So thanks a lot for that, George.
Yeah, well, you didn't answer my question. Do you work into the wee hours of the night from time to time? It seems to be just something that happens. Over.
I work into the wee hours of the night when something's gone wrong. On a normal day, you know, I pretty much work, you know, 8 or 10 hours when I'm here at home. When I'm on the road, it's less. But when I'm here at home, you know, it depends on what I'm doing that day, but no, the only time I'm working late at night is if there's something wrong, something's broken, and then my heart rate goes up and I, you know, quick on the spot to get it fixed. But I've done a pretty good job of designing it. It doesn't break very often. The last time it broke, it was a hardware failure, and that's when I owned the hardware, and that's why when I got home, I moved to the cloud. Anyway, that's, you know, That's it for that one. Back to you, Gordon.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going into 7 minutes here on the third hour, so I'm not going to hold it, Fred. But let me ask you this. We've got a dear friend and a very active member with South Cars, very much involved with AMSAT, so on and so forth, makes presentations all over the place to radio clubs and ham conventions and so on and so forth, much as I would assume that you do. He has started to mellow a little bit in his older years. In the respect, he's now doing it in his comfortable office chair, using the computer, supplying a video and audio presentation to wherever point it needs to be presented, put up on a screen, two-way communication on questions. Maybe you ought to think about that, or have you, over?
Well, you know, 2 years ago, or two summers ago, I bought a big RV, and my wife and I enjoy traveling around the country, and so, well, you know, one of the reasons I go around to these places is give us an excuse to get out there in the RV, so as long as that's available to me, I'm going to be doing it, because it's a lot of fun driving around out there and going to ham fests all over the country. I had a ball doing it the last couple of years in a row. But these conferences online by Skype and Echolink, yes, they're going to be there's going to be more and more of those as time goes on. I'm generally available. I pretty much don't turn down anyone for an interview, so it's just because I like to talk to people really more than anything else. So as time goes on, I have to agree with you. Yep, I may start using visual aids as well, but. You know, for now, you know, how do you beat this Echolink thing? I mean, I just loaded it up the other day, and you helped me get it going. And let me tell you, it's pretty darn handy. Back to you, Gordon.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, Fred, you have been talking to the world here tonight. You know, we have contact worldwide. And talking about amateur radio, we've got just a whole bucket of links and repeaters on 2 meters and 440 and IRLP nodes that have taken in this conversation tonight. So it's been a grand thing.
Well, thank you very much, Gordon. This is November 1, Sierra Uniform Zulu Suzanne, and I'm back. And thanks so very much for those comments, too. And if you work out those figures, Gordon, maybe you could split it with the rest of us. But anyway, let me break with you, and we're winding down the evening, and appreciate so much, Fred, for you coming aboard and spending your evening with us. And let me ask you as we wind down here, what do you think is in the future for QRZ.com? Do you have any future plans, and is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about QRZ.com or yourself before we end the evening? This is N1SUZ, and I'm throwing it back to you, Fred, AA7BQ.
The first thing you asked, the last thing, I answered the last question first was about myself, and I was just saying that although you can't tell it from the webpage, I'm exceedingly handsome and well-educated, but I'm not an eligible bachelor. My wife will attest to that. She's standing right here chuckling at me right now. QRZ is basically going to keep on keeping on. You know, my plans for it are to, first and foremost, is to get that logbook up and running, the version 2, because it's going to be a big thing with a lot of new features that people are going to enjoy, and it's going to work better than ever before. We don't really have any plans for any grand changes. I simply want it to be the best that it can be, doing what it does now. And I really can't think of anything else that it doesn't already do that can't be improved upon. So since I'm a tinkerer and a programmer, I'm going to be probably writing code and tweaking it and sprucing it up and giving it a new look. I do expect I'll redesign the database page layouts. I seem to do that every 1 or 2 years anyway. And you know, you can count on that happening. And that's about it. I just keep improving and jazzing up the look and feel, and I do things that are technically cool that appeal to me, and while at the same time not being so overly complex as that they confuse people. So that's my plan. Keep on keeping on, and talk to more people and have more fun. That's what we're here for, right? Back to you, Susie, AA7BQ.
Well, that's definitely what we're here for. You're right, Fred. This is N1SUZ. And before we wrap up tonight, and thank you for your time, let me throw it back to the audience here and for a final comment or question for you. So if there's anybody who would like to make any final comments or ask any final questions, please come aboard now with your suffix only, please.
One India.
Victor, Quebec, Victor.
Okay, NET recognizes WQNI, Paul, and Queen Victor, I think, was on the second one, which I doubled with him. So, Paul, come on aboard with any final comments or questions for Fred.
Okay, thank you, Suzanne, and hello to you, Chris, back in my old stomping grounds there in Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia. Fred, I did have a question for you, and, you know, I was curious about the QRZ logo. You know, you've got this little representation of the globe, if I'm interpreting it correctly, with the lines of latitude and longitude on there, and I was just wondering if there was a story behind that or not, where you came up with that, and if you have anything to tell us about that, WQ1I.
Oh, yeah, Paul. Well, if you ever get a chance to see one of the earliest QRZ CD-ROMs, they were designed, the cover art for that was designed by Walnut Creek CD-ROM, and they always put a globe on it, and it was kind of a picture of a globe with an antenna sticking out of it, and that became sort of our trademark logo, well, the inspiration for the logo, which I designed using Adobe Illustrator. And I just wanted a globe, but I wanted something that was something that sort of represented a globe that wasn't graphically all that complicated, so that it would reproduce well and be a small size. And so I actually just created that the globe that you see there in Illustrator, and basically laid out each little component by hand, that's how it came to be.
Okay, I hope that answers your question, Paul. Does it? And would you like to come back with any comments?
No, I'm a little slow on the trigger there. I just doubled with you, Suzanne. Fred, that's great. Thank you. I thought there had to be a little bit of a tail behind that. There usually are with things like that. But thank you so much, and thank you for all that you do. And I can't even imagine what ham radio would be like without QRZ. I have been in the hobby long enough that I remember when it wasn't available, didn't really even have much of the internet going at that time. It was in its infancy. And I remember having a little IBM black and white laptop with a database on there. I don't remember if it was QRZ or not. But anyway, you've created a great website, and you perform a fantastic service to amateur radio, and I certainly appreciate it, and we certainly appreciate your spending some time with us tonight. It's been a great night. So 73 to you, Fred and Suzanne. Back to you, WQ1I, Danbury, Connecticut.
Well, thank you, Paul, for your comments and your questions. This is N1SUZ, and let me go over to Chris, KB3VQV, who I doubled with, but I'm sure has another comment or question before we wrap it up. Chris, if you're there, come on aboard.
Suzanne, we are still here. Thank you for coming back. Final question to Fred. I missed a little bit of the there are some intermittent problems up here in Philly. Every now and then the channel goes completely blank for 10 minutes and comes back. So when did he get the idea to start QRZ, and what year was that? KD3 Victor, Queen Victor.
Yeah, Chris, that first happened in 1992 when I was on the Internet, on the early version of the Internet, before the World Wide Web. Some people wanted to get a copy of the call sign database, and so I bought it from the government and put it and reproduced it first on tape, the first edition that came out on a tape drive, and then for the second edition we started with CD-ROMs. And then a year later, with that same year I started the dial-up bulletin board just for fun, and then the opportunity came to me in 1993 to put it on the Internet. And since I worked in the Internet business, that was pretty easy to do. And it just took off from there, bit by bit. Back to you, Chris, AA72Q.
Well, you were sure a visionary. And I don't know it's an understatement to say hats off. I don't know what would be appropriate. But keep up with the good work. Thank you, KD3. Back to you, Net Control. you're still happy birthday harmonica song.
Well, thanks very much, Chris. This is NYSUZ, and Fred, I just want to thank you again. And let me go back to Gordon for a second. He says he has a quick comment for you. Gordon, KY6V, come on aboard.
Thank you, Susie. I was listening to the dates here. Fred, I just have to say this about that. KY6V here. My dad passed away as a silent key in 1992. Started in Spark App in 1921. Hurricane Andrew came through in August of 1992 and blew Miami apart, and Arizona was growing QRZ. Now, isn't that something, Fred? Over.
Yeah, it seems like a long time already, doesn't it, 1992. Well, thanks for putting that historical perspective. I should look it up. Yeah, what happened in 1992? That's when my child was born. But appreciate the thoughts, Gordon.
All right. Keep it up, Fred. Thank you very much. Susie, KY6V.
Oh, very good, Gordon. Thank you very much. And it is 22 minutes past the second hour of our show tonight, and we're going to wrap it up and let Fred get on with his life outside of South Stars tonight. Fred, I'm going to hand it back to you before I wrap it up here. And if you have any final comments for us, please let us know. AA7BQ, Fred, this is N1SUZ, and I'm sending it back to you for any final comments that you may have.
Well, thank you, Susie, and thanks to South Cars for inviting me into your organization and into the network here. We're in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. We're at 6:20 p.m. right now, and it is time for dinner. I can tell because the dogs are waving their tails at me right now. And it's been a great conference. I've enjoyed it. And if anyone there would like to speak with me or certainly drop me an email, you know, aa7bq@qrz.com, I'll definitely answer all emails. And know that if you ever go to the site and ask for help, that you're probably dealing with a volunteer. And if it's a simple thing or something dealing with the site, they're more than happy to help you out. And but if you ever need any help with anything a little more technical or a little out of the ordinary, feel free to drop me an email. I'm on constantly and enjoy talking to people. So thanks for all your good wishes and thanks for this opportunity to speak. And we'll see all of you down the line and on the website. Back to you, Susie, and we'll say 73.
Well, thanks very much, Fred. This is TMT Open Forum, and tonight we've been speaking with Fred Lloyd, founder and creator of QRZ.com. And Fred, we really want to thank you, everyone at South Cars, for coming aboard tonight and sharing your time and your expertise on QRZ.com and letting us share a little bit of you. We all appreciate what you've done and how you've helped Ham Radio, and all of us have used QRZ.com. So I just want to say thank you. And I want to thank your family, too, because we've taken you away from them for a night, too. And especially your lovely wife who's back there, I know for sure. But this has been South Cars, and we're going to close the net tonight on a happy note. We've really enjoyed you coming here and speaking with us. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on the VOIP.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been me, Suzanne, N1SUZ, and your guest speaker has been Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, founder and creator of QRZ. I'm saying 73s right now, and I'm closing this VOIP session, and the servers are going back to normal use. Thank you, everyone, for participating tonight and joining us. I want to say thanks to everyone, even the members who have rarely come to see us, but thank you so much, everyone, for your comments and your questions, and I'm officially closing the net now. Thanks, and 73.